So then we are going to continue with a discussion on financial instruments with characteristics of equity. And I'll give the floor to Angie, I believe.
Yeah, thank
Angie,
you,
are you?
Hans. Hello, everyone. So the purpose of this session is to seek feedback from ASAF members on potential refinements to disclosures that were proposed in the 2018 FICE discussion paper. The DP outlined three areas of disclosure: priority on liquidation, potential dilution, and key terms and conditions. And although there was overall support for the DP disclosures from various stakeholders, especially investors, a number of challenges were raised. These are highlighted on slides 5, 11, and 16. The staff developed potential refinements to mitigate these challenges, which we outline on slides 6, 12, and 17. The staff also conducted additional outreach during 2020 on these potential refinements, first with investors, as highlighted on slides 8, 13, and 19, and then with other stakeholders. And the staff will present disclosure proposals to the board at a future meeting, along with the feedback from this ASAF meeting and meetings with other stakeholders. So I will briefly summarize each type of disclosure's potential refinements before handing the discussion over to ASAF members to discuss the related questions. So if we start with slide 6, as seen on slide 6, the disclosures on priority on liquidation now focus on liquidation at an individual entity level and on priority based on the contractual terms. And as a simplification, the staff proposed that other information be disclosed as a narrative, such as intra-group arrangements and any differences in legal priority on liquidation or priority on resolution. So I'll now turn the discussion over to ASAF members to answer the questions on slide 9.
Okay. Anybody who wants to comment? Noble?
Yes, thank you, Hans. From the user's perspective, liquidation would be assessed for all claims, and therefore, we do not support the proposal to limit the disclosures to financial liabilities and equity instruments. We also do not agree with the quantitative disclosures because when an entity enters liquidation, the going concern assumption no longer holds, and neither book value nor fair value would be a fair presentation. So we would prefer a qualitative disclosure rather than quantitative disclosures. And having said that, we disagree with the quantitative disclosures. We have a lot of concerns on the table presented on slide 7 of the paper. This table breaks down the financial instruments of the consolidated group by legal entity. And we disagree with showing the breakdown of financial instruments for the subs, sub A and sub B, for two reasons. First, the conceptual framework states that the consolidated financial statements are not designed to provide separate information about the assets liabilities of any particular subsidiary. And we think this proposal is inconsistent with the statement in the conceptual framework. Second, we are aware that some conglomerates have thousands of subsidiaries, and it would be unrealistic to provide this disclosure by legal entity. And once you aggregate these figures, they no longer meet the objective of what you're trying to do. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Noble. The next person is Jay Ho.
Thank you. There are two items we think will be quite burdensome to prepare us and even cause disclosure overload. One is narrative description of the effects of the legal view of priority on liquidation when there is a difference between the legal priority and the contractual priority. And the other one is narrative description of the effect of liabilities, which are scoped out of IAS 32 on the order of priority on liquidation. As for the legal versus contractual disclosure, We think preparers would have to use additional resources to examine whether and how the legal priority of claims on liquidation differs from contractual priority. Also, the resultant disclosure would be too much detail and lengthy. As for the scope of liabilities, it could be very challenging for preparers to review all other liabilities that are scoped out of IS 32 and ascertain the order priority of those liabilities, along with liabilities that are within the scope of IS 32 and equity. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeho. Vincent.
Yes, good afternoon, everybody. So about the question, the disclosure prior to liquidation, so ANC was pretty supportive of the disclosure objective that you had initially in the discussion paper and was still supportive of having this disclosure objective. Having said that, if the goal is to get a waterfall of the group, we think that in many cases, the tabular information that you presented on slide 7 will unfortunately be unable to deliver the information that you have on your mind. That might actually work pretty well for small groups having few subsidiaries and non-complex funding structure. However, we think that having a synoptic waterfall as the one that you are contemplating on slide 7 will simply not be feasible for more complex group for two reasons. The first reason is that having the individual entity as a starting point is the right starting point. But the problem is that your table at the level of the individual entity may not capture the fact that basically some assets might be used as guarantee or collaterals and might be affected to the funding of some liabilities. And accordingly, this could impact the group waterfall. So this is the first limitation. And the second limitation is if you want to have a more global picture of what is happening at consolidated level, there is one additional issue that may arise. For instance, if you have 1 million euro to liquidate in a subsidiary, the overall impact on the group will very much depend on where that entity is located in the group. In other words, if you have two entities having the same net asset amount to liquidate, the impact might be different depending on where those two entities are located in the group. And basically, there is unlikely to be just one waterfall for the group, and this will much depend on various scenarios, when the entry points use. So basically, the tabular information is unlikely to capture that complexity. Unfortunately, we think that there is no easy way and no synoptic way of providing the information that you have on your mind, and maybe the solution for that would be the disclosure that financial institutions are already providing for the purpose of regulatory purpose, in the European Union, namely having a line-by-line disclosure of all the features of the financial liabilities and equity instrument, and then the users will have extensive information about the funding arrangement. But unfortunately, we think that there is no other way to provide the information that you have on your mind. And banks are currently doing this, so it might be also doable for other entities. With regard to the two other questions that you had on the slide about the question contractual versus legal, we just think that if you were to require a presentation of the tabular information, the information should just be presented on what will happen in the real life if the liquidity were to be liquidated. And if there is a legal requirement that goes against the law, well, in that case, you reflect the law. Now, with regards to the third question about the measurement basis that should be used, in your view, that should neither be the fair value nor the carrying amount. If you are considering that you are liquidating the entity, so in that case, you should use the liquidation values. And by default, you could require entities to present the carrying amounts, and if the carrying amount significantly different from the liquidation value, then in that case, you would require entity to present the liquidation value.
Okay. Thank you, Vincent. Good to see you again. And I give the floor to Friedrich.
Thank you, Hans. So based on the feedback from the OSG members, those who responded to the outreach, they supported some of the potential those disclosure requirements, but had a few concerns, which I'll be, I think, echoing some of the comments already made. One jurisdiction, the users supported the priority on liquidation. However, on the flip side, some other stakeholders, such as preparers, flagged the complexity and cost of the preparation for preparers of such a disclosures and potential disclosure overload. Another jurisdiction flagged potential complexity for the obviously multinational groups and or potential need to disclose the basis and assumptions that will go into such disclosures. A few members flagged importance for transparent inclusion of non-financial liabilities when ranking those the liabilities on priority on liquidation. And in the similar way, another member suggested to disclose contractual terms and conditions instead of clear ranking. Otherwise, it may lead to need to obtain legal opinion and incur additional costs for preparers. In terms of the disclosure, those members that reported disclosures of any amounts would support carrying amounts as opposed to fair values. None of the members, those that responded, supported fair values. That will be from me. Thank you.
Thank you, Friedrich. Yu Chen?
Okay, thank you, Han. Generally, the Chinese stakeholders support the board's proposal in this agenda paper. For the question one on page nine, the Chinese stakeholder also agree with that. They believe that this kind of improvement can provide users with more useful information, and they believe that the simplified disclosure requirement and the narrative information about impact of liquidation preference on financial reports can not only improve the visibility of the implementation of standards, but also comply with the cost effectiveness principle. However, they just have one concern or suggestion. They prefer carrying amount rather than fair value when making quantitative disclosures, because they think it might involve a lot of judgment, and it's very difficult for entity to estimate the recoverable amount or determine the fair value. That's our comment on question one. Thank you.
Thank you, Yu Chen. Mark?
Thank you. Obviously, when we responded to the initial discussion paper, it was probably one of the most critical responses that we've ever submitted. And looking at the slide deck and listening to the discussion, I still think it would be really helpful to understand how this fits with the principles of disclosure work, and maybe the staff could give us a link there. I think there are many difficulties in arranging claims on the basis of priority, especially where accounts are prepared on a consolidated basis. So although we welcome the proposals in the slides to deal with some of the issues, for example, by suggesting disclosure by individual entities, they don't really address issues such as preferential claims, for example, for tax. I think my most significant concern is that the proposed disclosures seem very onerous, and I don't see how they would meet any reasonable assessment of cost benefit, especially where liquidation is only a remote possibility. And obviously, although we're in a very unusual situation at the moment, we hope that there will be a return to normality. I'm struggling as to how legal priority and contractual priority might differ, given that a contract creates legal rights and obligations, and it would be helpful to understand that. And I think that if the board does move forward with these proposals, it would be really helpful to gain some insight from some rigorous field testing, especially with large groups. And that would be really helpful if it not only included an assessment of costs of complying, but also the benefits that it would bring to investors. Thank you.
Raymond?
I think the comments that I've got, I think, echo a lot of what has been said, so I'll keep it very brief. I've got a few questions that have come through in the comments that we've received. The first one being around the principles around disclosures, and I guess the question is, will this not add to the clutter that we are trying to get rid of in the financial statements, especially when we're asking for additional information to be provided in the financial statements? I think the example that was shown on the seventh slide was of particular concern because of the fact that there's a lot of additional information that is coming in on the individual subsidiaries. And I think while it may be illustrative, but I think it may also be persuasive to a lot of people when they look at it from that perspective, because they now, I think, will probably understand it as being provide information on an individual entity basis. And to Noba's point about, well, what happens where you've got multiple subsidiaries in a group, what sort of disclosure are we expecting to see in the financial statements coming out of that? The second issue is around the going concern assumption. If the going concern assumption is appropriate, then the focus that we've got in the information on the liquidation basis then seems to be at odds with that. And I think that needs to be addressed more clearly. I think the presumption is entity will continue to be a going concern. So this seems to indicate to us that, well, we are now placing a focus on liquidation values a lot more than on, particularly when it comes to financial liabilities and equity instruments, than we are on everything else in the financial statements. Is there any particular reason why that would be? I appreciate this is the FICE project, but you know, anybody who was looking at this holistically is probably going to have that as a question in the back of their mind. Thank you.
Jim. Thank you, Raymond. Jim Croker?
Turn that. I was having trouble with the mute button.
Oh, yeah, that's a familiar problem.
had a very similar comments to those made, particularly some of the comments by Nobu, so I'll try to just be additive, but did have questions about operability, particularly in large multinationals where the volume of subsidiary entities could be quite significant. And the one question also wondered, and it might be useful to think about, would the disclosure look the same if an entity was horizontally designed versus vertically designed? That is, how would this work when you have subsidiaries of subsidiaries? Does that look the same in the disclosure of an entity that is consolidated horizontally, that is, most of the subsidiaries are direct subsidiaries of the parent? Certainly those things would probably matter if the objective is sort of a liquidation type disclosure. Those things would likely matter in liquidation. And so maybe thinking through that, and then similar reaction to just getting user input on if there are quantitative amounts and the objective is really to show what may occur in sort of a wind up, what would be relevant is, you know, questions about fair value or carrying value. And then if some other value is relevant, is that even something that entities likely are in a position to on a cost benefit basis, determine on a periodic basis?
Okay, Mary, she's going to explain the difference between contractual and legal.
Oh, I'm going to comment, not explain. But thanks, Hans. And it, I guess two points on the contractual versus legal. I'm checking with Angie on this, but I think one of the key pieces of feedback we had about ability to do the priority disclosure was that it was would be beyond the bounds of reasonable cost in every circumstance if an entity had to predict how a bankruptcy court might rule and determine the outcome in liquidation. And I think that that's the reason for raising the question of emphasizing the contractual rather than the legal. I agree entirely with the comments that contracts create legal rights and obligations. I think Angie, if you can either nod or correct that what we were trying to get to with this distinction is saying, based on the terms of the instrument, without asking you to predict what, if you went into liquidation, the ultimate outcome of the bankruptcy court would be. And I'm not sure that that's conveyed clearly enough by something as shorthand as contractual versus legal. Yes, I also just wanted to particularly thank Vincent for his comments, not because I necessarily agree with all of them, but because we have heard from users of financial statements that improving information about priority is a huge issue for them. And I think we're all really good. I know it's, you know, my focus is generally what are the problems, what are the flaws, what will the, you know, identifying those things. But I think if we're really focused on responding to user needs, coming up with ideas about how to get the users at least the basic win on better information about priorities is really key to the success of this project, just because we heard so much from users about that being an ongoing source of frustration. Now, Angie, please correct me if I've overstated any of the or misstated any of the user feedback on this point.
And that's right, Mary. That was the understanding, that it's difficult to come up with legal. You might need legal opinions, and there could also be negotiations with creditors as well. And you know, things could change in the future scenario. And we weren't looking ahead at predicting exactly as you said.
Sue, please come in.
Thanks, Hans. Sorry, somebody's not muted. I was going to say a few things that actually Mary has now said, but I'll try and be additive. The main thing I was going to point out was that investors or users have told us this is really important information for them. And so, but they told us that what we'd proposed in, well, sorry, preparers told us that what was proposed in the discussion paper was too difficult to do because you can't really assess the liquidation of a group, because liquidations don't really happen on a group basis. They happen entity by entity. And the points were raised that Mary alluded to about, and Angie about, you know, we can't predict the legal outcomes, we can only tell what's in the contract. So what we're trying to do here is to address a really important investor information need that we've identified, but to try and make it as pragmatic as possible for people. So I think to Jim's question, whether the legal structure was horizontal or vertical wouldn't matter. As I understand the idea that we're working on at the moment, it's just that we're going away from a consolidated picture to a legal entity by legal entity picture. Now, obviously, we do need to look at cost benefit, but I think we are trying to find an effective way to provide this information need, because the need for the information has been expressed to us so strongly. And I guess, obviously, we don't expect or ask for every single entity in the group to have every single instrument listed out. It would have to be done on the basis of materiality. But the more practical suggestions you've got to help us to meet this information need, the better, because I don't think it's going to be appropriate for us to say, this is too difficult, we've already got enough pages in the financial statements, therefore we shouldn't do this, because we really want to try and give this information. The last thing I'll just say is that while I completely agree that, of course, the recognition and measurement and the basis for presentation of the financial statements is on a going concern basis, I'm not sure that that in itself means that a different perspective in the notes about these liquidation type scenarios isn't still useful information for investors. And I think that's what we're trying to balance as well. So, Vonson, thank you for your suggestion. I'll go away and have a look at those examples you referred to and see if that helps us with the prioritization information.
I don't see any further speakers. Angie, you want to continue?
Yeah. I'll move on. So as seen on slide 12, the disclosures on potential dilution, they now focus on the maximum number of additional ordinary shares that could be issued at the reporting date, instead of requiring a reconciliation of opening to closing balances. And as a simplification, the staff propose a narrative description of equity-settled share-based payments with cross-reference to IFRS 2 disclosures. So I'll now turn the discussion over to ASIF members to answer the questions on slide 14.
Okay, the floor is open. I see nobody. Okay, here they come. Mark, please.
Thank you. I think my one comment on this is that it does seem onerous to impose these requirements on unlisted entities. So the second bullet of the question. I agree with the proposal on slide 13 that they may have complicated capital structures. The disclosures are particularly relevant when new capital raising is contemplated. And obviously investors will be interested in the prospects of future earnings. But I do wonder whether the proposal on unlisted entities is perhaps a step too far.
Thank you, Mark. Vincent.
Yes, thank you. So about the information about potential dilution, so we agree with the proposed refinement, and we think that in particular this is a good idea to leverage the IFRS 2 information to avoid the duplication of information. About your question about whether the proposed disclosure should apply to listed or non-listed entities, well, basically in that case we think that it should apply to both entities for two reasons, because we think that users' needs in that respect, where they apply to users having listed equity investment or non-listed equity investment. So we think that that information would be useful in the two cases. And in addition, what we have observed is that in France, particularly non-listed entities usually have more dilutive instruments. So basically, if you don't apply the proposed disclosures to that population of entities, you might miss the target of the disclosure. I understand that you are asking the question because IAS 33 only applies to listed entities or entities that are about to be listed. So that would be quite interesting to understand why the scope of IAS 33 was designed as it is. Unfortunately, the basis for conclusion doesn't provide any clarity in that respect, but if you manage to understand why you have this scope in IAS 33, that might help you understand whether the rationale that applied for earnings per share would equally apply to the disclosures that we are talking about today, even though I suspect that the scope of IAS 33 was designed to be similar to the scope of the US equivalent AC 260. And my last comment about that is just to remind that IAS 33 was published more than 20 years ago, so that may not be the best benchmark to define the scope for your proposed disclosure. So in our view, you should go ahead for listed and non-listed entities, even though you have a discrepancy with IAS 33. Thank you.
Okay, Yu Chen.
Okay, thank you, Hans. We generally agree with the potential disclosure refinement for potential dilution. And the Chinese stakeholder, they have some concern about the maximum number. They hope the board could have more or could provide more explanation on the assumption basis and measurement of maximum number. They also suggest additional disclosure of repurchase plan and repurchase restrictions in order to help users have a better understanding of the transaction. Regarding the second question on page 14, our answer is yes. We think the both listed and the non-listed companies should disclose information related to potential dilution. The reason is that some non-listed company, the capital of the non-listed company structure, the capital structure are sometimes more complicated than the listed ones. So their capital may involve many financial instruments. So in our opinion, both the listed and non-listed should disclose this kind of information. Thank you.
Thank you, Yu Chen. I give the floor to Patricia.
Thank you, Hans. We're generally supportive of the enhanced disclosures. We vote for listed and unlisted companies to be required to make these disclosures for the reasons given by Vincent and Yu Chen. And so, but general support for the project. Thank you.
Okay, that's short and clear. Friedrich.
Thank you, Hans. I will be brief. Yes, those members that have responded support both listed and unlisted. Having said that, at the same time, similar to Vincent's comments, raised overlap with IS33 and rationale for IS33 to be limited to listed companies. One member particularly questioned, however, the incremental usefulness of the narrative explanation of significant change in maximum number, whether it will outweigh the benefit of potential disclosure overload, especially if the key terms to understand potential deletion will be already disclosed. That's it from me.
Thank you, Friedrich. Then Angie, you're going to introduce the last question.
Yes, thank you, Hans. So on, lastly, on slide 17, the disclosures on terms and conditions now limit the scope to all capital instruments that are issued for longer term funding and propose that for instruments where classification involves significant judgment because they have characteristics of both equity and debt, that the key features that led to the classification be disclosed. And I'll now turn the discussion over to ASAP members for the questions on slide 20.
Any takers? Yes, Jay Ho.
Thank you. We think it would be more appropriate to limit the scope of these disclosures to instrument where the liability and equity classification involve significant judgment rather than all capital instrument issued for longer term funding. Otherwise, entities might mechanically provide information about all capital instruments, even including those with certain, those with clear liability and equity classification. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeho. Any other questions? Friedrich?
I will be brief, thank you. I think the members generally agreed, those responded. However, one member questioned whether those similar disclosures have been included in IS 32 before the introduction of IFRS 7. Whether it would be worth to revisit the rationale when they were removed, if that's the case. And some members actually raised the question whether those key features should be limited to those significant judgment and whether that can definition can result diversity in practice and whether it will be better to specify which instruments should be subject to those disclosures. Thank you.
Thank you, Friedrich. Yu Chen.
Thank you. A very quick comment that the Chinese stakeholder agree the Chinese stakeholders' answer is yes for the question on page 20, based on the principle of materiality, because they think this approach will reduce the disclosure cost and can also meet the needs of users. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Yu Chen. Any other comments? That is not the case. Well, thank you all very much for the very rich comments that we received. We'll resume our meeting at 2 o'clock. I give it in the good hands of Sue. I have to leave for a meeting with EFRAG. So thank you for participating today, and I'll leave the rest of the meeting to Sue. Thank you very much.
Actually, we were going to do DRM now. So do you want to do DRM quickly, guys, before we break, or was that now?
I think that would be great if we could do it now. It won't take long. So,
all right. Yeah. Please go ahead.